case where it's straight sufficient, where it's two arm lengths away. What about two arm lengths away? It says, the Hechidomi says, what is it, what are we talking about two arm lengths away? He says, the Ikar go for Beni Uveni. Where there is like a bound or something that is between one tfisa within one arm's length and the other. So apparently how he's explaining what Rabbi Shmuel says is that if it's within one arm length, then in that particular case, no question that it's prohibited, right? If it is two arm lengths, so there the question is, you still have to count, according to Rabbi Yishmael, does it count three or does it count two, right? Even there, in that particular case. So that's kind of an extreme interpretation, I have to tell you the truth. But this is the way he's reading it. This is the way Rabbi is reading it, okay?
So
yeah.
Well, that was an idol.
Right.
So how could stones be falling off an idol?
It's not a statue in this particular case.
Oh, it's not a statue.
It's not a statue. It's a heap of stones.
Papers?
That start with two stones here, one stone on top, so that it begins to have like a figure. And then people come on and they throw a stone at it. This is the way they worshipped it. Okay? Right. By us, we say Tfilas HaDerech, you know. But we go on a long trip. There's a special broker that you make, that you should be protected and so on. They, their Tfilas HaDerech was to throw a stone at the Markulis, okay.
It's true, when a stone falls, it can roll.
Right.
It could be an arm.
Of course, absolutely. The Markulis Gahagavna Nihabi. So they say, does a makulis like this really exist? Or Tanya, didn't we learn in another place that Elohein Abde Beis Kulis? This is what the stones of Beis Kulis look like. Of course, Beis Kulis, I don't have to tell you, it looks very much like makulis, right? So,
Beis Kulis.
Yeah, Beis Kulis, it says.
And that represents.
It's close enough to Markulis that probably refers to it, but they don't want to mention it. Yeah, right, right. So, Achas Mekan, right, one stone here, the Achas Mekan, and one stone here, the Achas Hagabehen, and one on top of them. Omar Rava, so Rava says, Kitanya Hahi Biyika Markulis, says, what we're learning about over there is the main Markulis. In other words, what Robert is trying to say at this particular point is, this goes back to the business where, you know, the Chachamim said, nobody puts up a little Markulis, right? But Rabbi Yishmael is of the opinion that that people do make a small Markulis next to the big one. So in that particular case, he says, the main one has to have as its foundation, what? Two stones with a third one on top, right? That's the way it has to be. But a little Markulis could be any arrangement of stones as long as it's in the general area or something like that. Okay? This is how Rava interprets it. Okay. So now the Telemaisa. Beyanai Malka Chorav. The royal palace of King Yanai was destroyed. It's one of the Hasmonean rulers. You know, the period right after the miracle of Hanukkah, you had Shimon, who was the last surviving brother of the five Hasmonean brothers, you know, the sons of Atasyohu. He was the one who survived all the wars against the Greeks. So he became the first ruler And he, as a matter of fact, he was both a Kohen, because this we know, right, Matzioh HaKohen, and so on and so on. And at the same time, he became a Melech, so he was the first Jewish king in many, many years, because there was no Jewish king before him in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Time in the first Beis HaMikdash, of course, this is the time when you had kings in Judah and kings in Israel and so on and so forth. But beginning with the Babylonian exile, there was no longer a Jewish king. So he was the first Jewish king after the victory of the Maccabeans, you know, over the Romans. And then the dynasty continued until you had a guy by the name of Herod. Well, actually it was Antipas, his father, who was he married into the Hasmonean family, and Herod married the daughter, unfortunately he killed her. He was a real meshuggah, and so on and so forth. So Alexander Yanai was one of these rulers, and he built a palace, naturally. Okay, so his palace was destroyed, probably, let's say, at the time of the Roman occupation or something like that. The palace was destroyed. Okay, so also Oivdei Koychovim, right? So the idolaters came into the ruins, right? Ukima Beis Bakulis, and they set up within it, Ukimim Bay, within it, Bakulis, and Bakulis, okay? So also Oivdei Koychovim, Bakrinei, so along came other idolaters, the Loipalcha the Bakulis, who did not worship Bakulus, and Shaklinhu, and they took the stones, including, of course, what had been the Bakulus. In other words, they destroyed the Bakulus. They took the stones, the Chipu Behen, the Rochim Stratoyers, and they used it in order to cover, as we would say, to pave with it, Drochim, you know, streets, roads, right, and Stratoyers, so that would be like highways. Word that, incidentally, I mean, we still have, you can see the equivalent in the word strata, right? You see it in the Italian strada, which is, you know, the autostrada, that's the expressway that they have over there and so on. So, yeah, there was a movie once upon a time, it's how you move, La Strada, right? Right, yeah, so right, that's yeah. The same word, right? That's the word. So Ikar Rabbanon, so here now that the Goyim went and they paved this road. So Ikar Rabbanon, they were rabbis, the Farshe, the Ikar Rabbanon, Lay Farshe. So there were rabbis who they stood away from it, Parish, you know, Parish, separated themselves from it. In other words, they would not walk on it. Why? Because to them it was idolatry. Whereas other rabbis didn't hesitate to walk upon it. They didn't consider it. Okay. All right. So, we have to consider what are the things that we learned. And that was stressed again and again in previous chapters. How does an idol become nullified? Bittul. Remember?
It was broken up.
All right. Who is qualified to nullify an idol?
A builder.
No. The answer is a non-Jew, an idol worshiper. He can nullify it, but then it's permitted. Well, not necessarily the builder. A goy. Yeah. An ordinary goy comes along and, you know, and he destroys it, okay? As we said at that time, if you have an idol and the guy comes and he destroys it, means that he no longer believes that it has any divinity in it, okay?
In that case, he destroyed it and used the stones.
Right, but not only he, is a Jew permitted to use it? The answer is yes. Once the idol has been nullified, we learn that it's Torah, so it's permitted, okay? So, those rabbis who didn't hesitate to walk on the road that was paved with these stones and that once upon a time had been part of a Makulis, because they figured the Goyim had destroyed it, In doing so, they showed their contempt for the whole idea of the Michaelis, right? And therefore, a Jew is permitted to make use of it. So the question is, so why didn't those rabbis who refused to walk on it, what was their reasoning? That's the question. So Omar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said, B'nan shel kadoshim mahalech alehen v'nan nifresh mehen. That's a good question, he says. I can give you an example of a very heiliger rabbi. And this heiliger rabbi didn't hesitate to walk on it. So why should we hesitate to walk over there? What? Are we going to be more Catholic than the Pope, right?
Lahabdil,
right. And he said, the Gemara says, Bandi, who is this very, very holy man? He says, it was Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Sibai. Rabbi Menachem, the son of Rabbi Sibai. So why did they call him literally the son of a holy people? In other words, an extremely holy person, right? He wouldn't even take a look at the figure on a coin. I mean, we know the figure on a coin. I mean, you have pictures of people over there. We used to have Lady Liberty on the coin, you know, like the Statue of Liberty or something like that and so on, right? So, naturally, in the Roman days, what kind of coins did they mint? They had pictures of the emperor. The same thing, the Greeks, they would probably make pictures of the idols and so on. So he refused to look at the form, you know, that the what was engraved in the coin. Refused to look at it. Okay, so this is why he was very holy. Whereas, do we think twice about looking at the nickel or anything like that? No, we accept it in the Gaudish study. Okay, my Tama. The man, the Porish, so on. So what is the reason, he says, that the one who refused to go on the highway, so it's over law, so he was of the opinion, that would be the accordance with opinion voiced by Rab Gidl, the son of Rab Chia, by Yosef, who's the son of Yosef, Omar Rav, who's under the name of Rav, Benayim, the Kravis, Havidas, Krechobim, how do we know that any offering made to an idol, you can never nullify it? Shenemar, because the pasuk says, this being Tillim, says why laval pior, they associated themselves closely with the Baal Peor. Remember that was the idol at the time of Bilam, right? And they ate the sacrifices of the dead, of course meaning idol worship. Okay, ma meis ein lo betela le'olam, just as in the case of a person who is dead, there's no way to nullify it. We're not allowed to remember to have any use whatever, right, from a dead person. They have to show the respect. So after Kravas of it is Kachobim, so likewise an offering to idolatry, Ein Lo Betela Le'olam. You can never have, you know, any nullification, whatever. Uman Delei Porish, and how about those rabbis who did not hesitate to walk on the road? So Omar, he was of the opinion and said, what is prohibited is only a sacrifice such as what was given in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Penim over here refers to the Beis HaMikdash. If it's the same kind of a sacrifice given over there, then in that case you're not allowed to have any Hador. But if it's not, I mean, didn't sacrifice stones in the base of it. You understand? That's the reason. He did not sacrifice stones. So, in that particular case, Amabila came from the Invaleka, and it doesn't exist in this particular place. Okay. All right. I'm going to stop at this point. My throat is just about run out of steam completely. Okay, we are continuing now with the very bottom of Avodah Zarah, Daf Nun, Amud Aleph, 50A, third line from the bottom, and tonight is the 13th of the month of September in the year 2006. Getting closer and closer to Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Right. All right. So, Omar Rav Yosef Bar Abba. Alright? So Rav Yosef Bar Abba said, Ikla Rabba Bayibio Le Asbin. A scholar by the name of Rabba Bayibio came to our town. The also, the Isei Basti Sibiode. When he came, he brought the following baraisa with him. Okay? Remember again that everything was transmitted orally. And so therefore it was impossible to know each and everything that had been said in Yeshiva A as compared to what was happening in Yeshiva B and so on and so forth. So people would travel back and forth. And when they would come, so they would bring, you know, whatever subject matter was discussed in the yeshiva that particular week, and they would report it. So he came back with a quotation that had been discussed, happens to be in the Tosefta, and this is the quotation. It says, Oved Kechovit, an idolater, Shehevi Avonim Min HaMarkulis, if he takes stones that were originally thrown at the Markulas, right? As we say, this is the way they, you know, they worship. And he says, "V'chipa behen drochim the tratatios," which really should be stratatios, okay? And he covered with them roads and streets, because you know the word streets is related to the word stratatios. That's why he. Even though it's over here, you have to realize that sometimes in the printing of the Gemara, a guise fell in, as far as, you know, a strange word is concerned. That as we would say, Habocha Hazetzer, which means the person who composed the, you know, the type, okay, is not necessarily a great Talmid Chacham. And so, you know, they didn't get everything exactly right as far as spelling is concerned. Yes?
No.
Right, okay. So, but anyway, the idea is clear enough, all right? They took stones and they used it in order to pave streets and roads. Okay? That's what it says. All right. All right. So, the answer is Mutoros. Okay? Then, it's permitted for a Jew to walk on these roads. Okay? It's permitted for a Jew to walk on these stones. These stones. Why? They've been nullified by the guy himself who took it. And, you know, took it away from the Makulas and then said he used it, you know, for some secular purpose.
So it was the guy who did it.
Right, said Oyvei Kohovim, says an idolater who did this, okay? And of course this goes back again to what we've learned several times in the last few weeks, namely, who can be Mevatel, who can nullify Avodah Zarah? The answer is a Goy can do it, but a Jew cannot do it under normal circumstances, okay? And this is what the rest of this quotation brings out. Yisrael Shehevi Avodim in the Markulis, or how about if it was a Jew who picked up stones from the Markulis, right? V'chipo behen drachim svatot yos, and he used it in order to cover or to pave, if you wish. You know, the word chipo, it's related to the same word which means a chuppah, you understand? That's why I say it's a covering, you see? So he covered with them, roads and streets and so on, then asuras, they are prohibited to the Jew. Right? And the further comment is, Vales Nagor, Vale Bar Nagor, Diferkene. And there is no scholar or a great scholar who knows how to interpret this particular Baraisa, this particular Tosefta. Okay? Yeah, hi. Good.
Why do they say that? Because it seems so straightforward to me.
Right.
And it was,
all right.
He broke it down so it wasn't any less.
But obviously, let's say, at the time when he came to town, he knew that they had been discussing this particular subject matter about Avodah Zarah, and can a Jew have any hanoah? Can a Jew have any benefit whatever from Avodah Zarah, particularly because of what we read a couple of lines previously, namely that the Kravis La Avodah Zarah is Asura, right? That if you give a gift to an idol, in this case, you add a stone to the zone, so therefore that makes it prohibited to the Jew, right? And now we find out that if a goy takes those stones and uses it for, a non-religious purpose, for a secular purpose, then it's perfectly okay. But if a Jew, according to this teaching, he's not allowed to. And he doesn't know how to explain this. There was no scholar, he says. Nagor means actually like a carpenter. But he says there's no carpenter, meaning, if a scholar who knows how to drill, we get down to the bottom of things and so on, who can explain this particular teaching. So Omar Rav Sheshes, we're on the third line, fourth line, on the top of Nun Omid Beis.
Right.
So Omar Rav Sheshes, so Rav Sheshes said, Ana loy nagor ana, velo bar nagor ana, uferkino loy. He says, I am not a great scholar, nor am I the son of a great scholar, he says, but I'll explain it. God's fine. Okay. Of course, the expression over here reminds us in the Bible where they say, like for example, Amos, prophet says, he says, I'm not a Novi, velo ben Novi. I'm neither a prophet nor the son of a prophet. Right, you see. So, this is the same style over here, except that this is in Aramaic. So the question is, my kusha leila Rav Gidol. So Taka, what was the kasha that Rav Gidol didn't understand? So it says, be'ino ke'en penim v'leka. This is what he didn't understand. At the bottom of the previous page, what did we learn? We learned that Tikrovus Lavida Zora is prohibited, correct? But then along came Rav Gidol and he says, yeah, but wait a minute. That applies to something which was a practice in the Beis HaMikdosh. But if it was not in the Pinim, in other words, in the sanctuary itself, in the Beis HaMikdosh, then in that particular case, that should not apply. Then in that case, there shouldn't be any difficulty, whatever, in what? A Jew simply taking a stone and using it for paving. So why did the teaching say it's not for a Jew, it's only for an idolater to do it? This is the thing he didn't understand. Okay? Yeah. Michael Gidl is a bit in Panim, right, for Lekan, it's not there. So, right, yes.
He's saying that the idolater
right.
Step on it,
yeah.
So it was no.
Yeah, automatically, right. It's mevatel, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
It shows
right.
that he nullifies the sanctity of it.
That's
it's
right.
Exactly what it is, right?
Yeah.
Right. I'm a Rav Yosef Bar Abba. So, another similar story. Rav Yosef Bar Abba said that Ikla Rabba Bar Yirmiyahu last reign, that Rabba Bar Yirmiyahu came to our town. We also came, and he brought another teaching with him. What is this other teaching? So this deals already with a different inyan, and what he's going to try to do is to see whether there's a parallel between the second teaching and the first teaching. So this is the second. It says, Maslin Mizahamin Bashvis, Vyain Maslin Mizahamin Bimoe. Okay, so here we have to understand, first of all, what do the words say? Maslin means to take out the tola'as. What's a tola'as? The worm. So you deworm a tree, right? Umezahamim, this is umzuhamo, which means filth. So there are different explanations what they mean over here. One says it means that you can put like some kind of a caustic or a putrid smelling thing on the tree in order to try to preserve it. Where? What part of the tree? The answer is if the bark is a little bit off and you're afraid that it's going to be attacked, you know, the tree will get ruined as a result. So it says that you are permitted to put, you know, to do this, in other words, to fix it up chemically, so to speak. Others say that it's the application of dung to it, you know, animal dung. But anyway, something that you smear on it so that it would cover the affected area. Okay, so what they're saying is over here that you are permitted to do this type of an activity, Bashvius, in the seventh year. Now remember, what does the seventh year tell us in Eretz Yisrael? You're not allowed to do any kind of agricultural work. Okay? So, nevertheless, they say, if you want to save the tree, therefore they gave permission to do it in the seventh year.
Okay. Right. Wasn't it considered something that we're using?
No, that has something to do with Asherah.
It has
nothing to do with the Asherah. Nothing, whatever. Okay. But for the time being, we've taken the Asherah and chopped it down. Okay. But we're talking about agricultural work. What would be permitted in Shvius? And of course, we know that in general, agricultural work is not permitted in the seventh year. Okay. But the teaching also says, you're not allowed either to deworm or to put on this covering during cholamoid. Now, what's the din as far as cholamoid is concerned? The answer is, during cholamoid, you're supposed to treat it as yontif, you understand? Granted, there are certain things that you can do that, you know, on cholamoid, that you cannot do on the actual, let's say, the first day of Yontov or last day of Yontov and so on, you understand? But Chol HaMoed, you're permitted to do certain things, but on the other hand, you're also supposed to treat it as Yontov. And how do you treat it as Yontov? You have to show the same respect on Chol HaMoed for, you know, for those days as you would on Yontov itself. If you've ever been to Yerushalayim, the custom is, in general, that businesses are closed in Chol HaMoed. They're not open, right? All Pesach, all Sukkot, and so on, they're closed, okay? And if you go down to Borough Park, by the way, and you see, I remember, my first shock, cultural shock, that came in Eretz Yisrael. Well, I mean, I've had others as well, but this struck me particularly. We were visiting with Bela for Yontif, okay? Needless to say, Anne and I kept 2 days Yontif, okay? So here, the second day Yontif, and I take a look, what's going on in the street over there, and I see Yidden with belt and payas and women all dressed up in their yontif kleder, and the children all dressed up in their best,
And they're running into buses and cabs and everything else. It's Cholomein. But where were they going? There was what they called Luna Park. What's this, Luna Park?
Yeah,
you know, they set up rides and things like that and so on. So, you know, the parents were taking the kids to have a good time. I saw a similar scene in Borough Park afterwards. Again, you know, Hasidim all dressed up with their very best, the women, the children, and everything else. It's Yantif, you see. And they rope off certain areas in Borough Park that they don't permit any traffic during Cholomein, even though we're allowed to travel, and still they rope off those areas so that, you know, people can have these street rides and stuff like that. So, okay.
But they still serve 2 days.
Yeah, in America they observe 2 days,
yeah.
No question.
Yeah.
Problem comes in for an American who is in Eretz Yisrael and is not settled there permanently.
Yeah.
Once you decide that you settle permanently, then you start in. Although I know that even Yossi Bela went through a transition period where at first they observed 1 day but wouldn't do any malacha on the second day, you understand? But eventually they became
Israel.
Israel, right. Exactly. So this is what Cholomein is supposed to be. The fact that some of us treat it as if it were an ordinary weekday, that's not really the right spirit for Cholomein. But there is a tractate in the Gemara, you know, called Moed Katan, which deals with the laws of Cholomein. And the basic rule that we have over there is two of them. One of them is, if it is malacha, if it's work which is needed by the public in general, you're permitted to do that. For example, a doctor. I mean, the ilm has to come. I mean, he has to treat people because people get sick. Okay? So there he is serving the people. And food stores definitely are open on Cholomein, right? Exactly, of course. People have to eat, no question. Absolutely. So, where the public is involved, then there is a heter that it's permitted, you see, to serve. And also, the other one is what we call Meleches Dover HaOved, which means if something is going to be ruined because you don't do it on Yom Tov, then in that particular case you're permitted to do something in order to try to prevent that from happening. Now this is what we're dealing with over here, right? It should be what we're dealing with over here, but yet what was this teaching that he brought with him, the one that sort of puzzled everyone, that During Cholomein, you're not allowed to do these couple of things that we said, you know, to deworm the tree or to smear, you know, something in order to keep the tree from, getting ruined, right? And he says that not allowed to do it during Cholomein. So obviously, since it goes counter to what the general rule is for Cholomein, this is why, this is a question. How come?
Now this finding that you could during the seventh year.
During the seventh year, that's right.
Yeah.
Because how come in Shvius you can do it, and in Cholomein you can't do it? Right, doesn't make sense, right?
Okay.
This is about that can't figure it out. Khan the Khan, and in any case, whether it is doing Shavuos or it is doing Cholomein, Ein Megazmin Besokin Shemin Ligzom. I have to stop at that point. That's a period over there. although it's not there. But, you know, part of the problem with learning Gemara is that there's no punctuation.
That's a big problem.
So you have to get into the swing of it in order to get the idea of what is it they're trying to say over there. So, what is Ein Megazmin? Ein Megazmin says not allowed to prune either during Chol HaMoed, you know, to prune the trees, either during Chol HaMoed or during the seventh year. Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Pardon me? Shavuos has no Chol HaMoed. No. Right. Shavuos is a very Israel, just one day, and by us, well, it's 2 days that we observe it. Yeah, but that's it. It's no Chol HaMoed. Right.
Shemitah lasts a whole year.
Yes.
Kol
HaMoed
at most is the last
5 or 6 days or something like that. Right. Correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So but when they're referring to the Vashvias, they're referring to the year.
Sabbatical year. Right.
Not
right. The Shavuos. Oh, no. That's what I mean by Shavuos. It's the seventh year.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. But it says, Besochin Shemen Ligzom, or Ligozum, it's really the way I should read it, but you're allowed to put oil, to smear it with oil, if it has been pruned, Bein B'moed, whether it is the Chol HaMoed, or Bein B'Shviis, right? Or whether it is during Shviuos, you're allowed to put oil on it, to smear it with oil in order to preserve it. If when had it been proved? The answer is that had it been proved beforehand. Right. Okay. Not allowed to do it during the seventh year, but if it had been done prior to the seventh year, then you're allowed to preserve the tree by doing this. Okay? But he says, well, that's dago, v'lei badago, nifarkini, right? And again, there is no great chacham, nor son of a great chacham, who can understand, who can explain it. So Omar Avira, so Ravina said, ano le nagar, ano, v'lo badagar, ano, right? Just as we had before, right? Ravina comes in and he says, I'm not a great scholar, I'm not the son of a great scholar, but nevertheless, I'll explain it. Says, my kokashale, so tell me, you know what was difficult for him to understand? So, ilemo, if we say, moed ashvis kokashale, that the problem is the difference between Chol HaMoed and the seventh year, right? Maishno shvis, why is shvis different to shore? That he says it's permitted, right? A Maishna Moed, and on the other hand, why does he say that as far as Chol HaMoed is concerned, the Osir that is prohibited to do it? He says, Mi Domi Shviz, can you really compare the two? The reason for these actions really is different in the seventh year as compared to what? The Chol HaMoed says, Midomi says, can you merely make a comparison? Shviuos, the seventh year, he says, Melacha Osa Rachmanim, the Torah prohibits doing real work, right? But Tircho Shorei, but Tircho, in other words, you know, to do something which doesn't involve that much effort, that would be permitted. Moed, however, during Chol HaMoed, he says, afilo tircho nami asur. You're not allowed even to do even something like that, which involves, you know, some difficult work. The Ela zihu gives him lower kokashim. So he says, there I explain there's a difference in concept between the two. However, it doesn't solve another problem. He says, what is the difference between the fact that zihut, remember this is putting the chemicals on the tree, you know, or dung or whatever it was, okay? Gizim kokashile, right?
as compared to pruning, this is difficult to him. Maishdo zihum nishori. Why is it that he permitted the smearing of the stuff, right? Maishdo gizum, whereas when it came to to pruning a tree, the usur, it's prohibited. Midomi. Can you really make a comparison between the two? No. Each of these actions represents a different idea. Zihum indicates, why are they smearing it, he says? Ukumi ilona vishori. All that they're doing is to take the tree and trying to preserve it. Okay? Gizum, however, pruning it, avri ilona, it makes the tree grow better. In other words, it's already producing, it's a different type of an action, an activity. The also is prohibited. The yellow zihum azihum kokashale, right? But rather, he says, the question is about zihum. Why is it permitted in one case and prohibited in the other case? The katoni that we learn, maslin mizahamin bashvis. We have learned in another Mishnah, it says that you're allowed to deworm and you're allowed to smear, whatever you're smearing on and in the seventh year. Raminhu, and we ask the following question, it says there's a contradiction where it says, Mizahamin is Hanatios, the Chorchin Oson, the Kotmin Oson. What are you permitted to do? There's a Mishnah in Shvius which says that you are permitted to smear these things, right? The plants, the chorchin osan, and then you're allowed to put a bandage around them. The kotetin osan, we're allowed to put ashes over there, or maybe ashes on the bottom. The osan lahem botim, you're also permitted to put like literally houses. What we mean is that, let's say you set up poles here, like a square or something like that, you set up around it in order to protect it. So all these things are in order to protect what is already there, right? Not only that, but umashkin osan, and you're permitted also to water them. But when? What are we talking about? It's ad Rosh Hashanah. In other words, in the sixth year, you're permitted to do all these things in anticipation of the fact that you want to preserve it when you know that they're not going to do any work on this during the seventh year. So it's ad Rosh Hashanah in, yes, until Rosh Hashanah, but Bashvis, but in the seventh year, lo, not allowed to. The Dilma Kidarav Ukpo Bachoma, but he says, but maybe we should follow instead the teaching of Rav Ukpo Bachoma. The Yoma Rav Ukpo Bachoma, Trei Kashkushe Havu, Chadlav Riye Ilona, the Osur, the Chadlistume Fili, he says, there are two different types of activities that you are allowed to, to sort of bandage or to dig. According to Rashi, it means digging underneath olive trees. In other words, in order to during shrias. It says one is permitted, the other one is prohibited. What is prohibited? He says, "Chad lavriya ilodo v'osur." If you're doing it in order to make the tree grow better, then in that case it is prohibited during shrias, right?
To preserve, right?
But he says, "V'chad l'stumei fillei." But if you want to just fill in cracks to see that the, you know, the tree doesn't get damaged more, the Shori does permit it. So he says, Hochinami. So he says, likewise, again, Trei Zuhome Ave. Again, there are two ways, you know, to put, you know, like the dung and so on over on the tree. Chag Lekumei Eloni, one is in order to preserve the tree, the Shori, that's permitted. The Chag Lekumei Eloni, but if you're doing it in order to make the tree grow better, then it's also it's prohibited. So there's...
I'm a little confused. See, now, when that Rabbi asked about this, he said that Shvi itself,
Shvi, 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 Shvi. Yeah, the year of Shvita. Now, the sixth year it would be permitted. I mean, after all, the idea is that you have to prepare in the sixth year because you know that the Shvi's are allowed to do it. So this is part of preparation.
This is, what we just learned, this is for the sixth year. The
Shvi is itself. What can you do? If it's a matter of protecting the tree, that would be permitted. But if it's a matter of doing some action in order to make the tree grow stronger, grow better, put on more branches, etc., etc., understand? And that were more fruit. So that would be prohibited.
We were talking about watering.
Yes.
Watering.
Right. I mean, you know, hopefully there'll be enough rain to do the watering itself. However, and again, in the Mishnah, in Moed Katan, they do permit watering certain types of fields, irrigating and so on. I say certain types, not that it's not a universal thing, but in order to, you know, to make sure that it doesn't go to ruin,
right.
So watering would be permitted.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Well, you have to remember, right, both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel and so on. But of course, these rules that we have over here are particularly, you know, applicable to Eretz Yisrael because Shvius doesn't really apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. Hopefully, we will return. We will return. Okay, so he said, "Yelo sicha sicha kakashani." Says, but you know what? It's difficult. The fact that we said you're allowed to put oil, you know, olive oil, obviously, right? There is the kasha. He says, "There's the difficulty." The katane. In that we learned Sochin Shemin the Gozum, that you are permitted to put oil on what has already been pruned, Bein B'moed, Bein B'shvi'is, whether it's during Chalabed or the seventh year of Ramindu, and then a contradictory one which says, what? Sochin is Hapagin, Menachim, Fatmin, Osir, Ad Rosh Hashanah. So you are permitted to put oil on the unripe figs. That's what pagi means, unripe figs. Beth Page in Long Island is really Beth Pagi. In other words, they had a lot of figs growing over there. Yeah, right. So you're allowed to do that, okay? But when? He says, Ad Rosh Hashanah, right? Until Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, oh, what is a Menachmin and Fatmin? There also, he says, permitted to put, make a hole in the fig and to fatten it. I guess by putting in oil or something like that through the oil, makes the fig grow bigger, okay? And you're permitted to do that until Rosh Hashanah, right? But Ad Rosh Hashanah in, yes, until Rosh Hashanah, right? But Uva Shviyis, lo, but not during Shviyis. So he says, Mi Domi, can you again compare the two businesses, you know, Shmim and Goyal. He says, Hocha ukuma ilani v'shari. If it is in order to preserve the tree, you know, keep it from further harm, then it's permitted. But hasam, the tree itself. But hasam petumi peiro, but this business of fattening the fruits, that also, that would be prohibited, because you're doing something already, it's a malacha, which, you know, would not be a needed malacha during Kolobayt. Omalei Rav Sama, the reid Rav Ashi, the Rabino, so Rav Sama, the son of Rav Ashi, said to Rabino, Bar Yibio, remember to say Rabino Bar Yibio, the one who was bringing in all the news that he had learned, right? It says, Sicha de Moed, Azim de Moed, Kokashale, right? Putting on the oil during Kolobayt, and putting on the chemical, whatever you want, or the dung, or whatever it is, that the smelly chemical on the challah made, there is a difficulty. Why? It says, Michte hai ukumu v'hai ukumu. In either case, they're both doing what? They're preserving the tree. So why should we say that, in one case it's permitted, in the next case it's prohibited? Maishno hai deshori, right, exactly what he's saying. What's the difference between one case where it's permitted, or maishno hai also, and the other case where it is prohibited? So he says, haine tekoam alei, so this is the reason why he said to him, he says, les nagor, velo bar nagor, in other words, this is why Rabino Bar Yimio said, he says, I have these teachings, I don't know how to explain them. Too many contradictions between them. Okay? So.
Well.
Yes.
One first line is to preserve it, another is.
To make it grow better, right?
Yeah,
bigger,
grow
better,
etc. Yeah.
Right. This is essentially what the difference is between them. Right. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. So Amar Rav Yehuda, right? The same Amar Rav. He said, "Avoid as kechovim shoev di noisa b'makel." He says, "Okay, there is an idol where the worship of this idol consists of a stick." What's this, a stick? Apparently, no. Now we're not talking about a branch. We're talking about an idol this time. But this is, remember, with Marculus, what was the form of worship? You threw stones, okay? All right. But there are other idols. This particular idol, the worship consists of taking a stick, either waving it or hacking with it or something or other, okay? Let's say hacking with it, okay? Beat on the idol with it. That's how it was worshipped, okay? So, Shova Makel Bifodeho Chayov. If what he did is to break the stick before the idol, then he is guilty. He's committed a sin. Zorak makel befodeho poter. However, if he simply throws a stick at it, then he is poter. Okay? He's not guilty. So Amalei Abaye the Rava. So Abaye said the Rava, he says, Maishno shovar da Amalei. What is the difference? He says, the difference is, he says, shovar, when he breaks the stick, it's the Havalei Ke'en Zavicho, right? Then this is similar as if he had sacrificed to it. Why? You ask me. What happens in the case of a sacrifice? They have to slaughter the animal, right? Or in some cases they have to break the neck or something like that. Not of the animal, but of a bird. If it's a bird sacrifice, okay? So,
in other words, breaking the stick is analogous to it, and therefore this is why he is guilty of idolatry. You understand? Because we're talking about a Jew in this case, right? And on the other hand,
is it a particular kind of stick we're talking about?
No, a stick. Don't ask me what. A branch, a stick, a face was. Okay.
And is it done in the vicinity of the Avodah Zarah?
Right, exactly. Exactly, right. Okay, now. Okay. Zorak Name, but he says, throwing it? Havalei Kein Smikra. Right? So that's the same. It's similar again to an action that takes place with Korbanos on the Beis HaMikdash, because what happens after the animal is slaughtered? Kohen has to gather some blood from it, right? And then what does he do with the blood? Has to sprinkle it on the Mizbeach. Right, exactly. Okay? So he says, so that being the case, it says, what does he do? He throws, literally, Zrika means, to throw. He throws the blood on the Mizbeach. So, throwing the stick, according to Abaye, it's a similar action. So what are you telling me, that throwing is, he's potter, and the other one is in the chayav, right? So, yes, right, okay. So Omalei, so he answered him, he said, Be'ino Zeriko Mishtaberes, he says, when the Kohen has to throw the blood, there has to be like, it's broken, it's not one sweep, but the broken sequence or something like that. The leko. And in this case, where he simply threw the stick at it, it's garnished. It did not break. Okay. Alright. So, I'm going to stop at this particular point, two lines from the bottom. So, Mirz Hashem will continue next Wednesday night. Alright, we continue tonight being the 20th of September. In the year 2006, the summer is gone, I'm afraid. Fall is here. The holidays are occurring in their proper season, because as far as Chag HaSukkos is concerned, it has to be B'tkufas HaShana, which means when the year takes a turn, which means the turn from summer to fall. And this is why in modern Hebrew, Tekufa means a season of the year, too, among other things. It means a period of time or a season of the year. Okay? Okay, so we are now at the bottom of Avodah Zarah, Daf Nun on the base, 15b. And now they ask the following question. They ask a kasha about what we just learned. It says, Sofas Lord Soya, Oishanosach Mephoneha Avid Shalmimi Raglayim. Alright? Comma. Then we go on to the other page. But first let me translate what this is. Okay. It ain't so nice. He says, what if you fed it excrement, the idol? Come back to that in 1 second. Okay. You smear excrement on it, or something like that. Okay. The word sofas actually means it's like punched up it. Okay. All right. So you feed it excrement, or you've poured in front of the idol. Avit shel memei raglayim. Avit is like a container over here, a container of urine. Okay.
In other words, to desecrate it.
Yeah,
no, it's not to desecrate. That's the whole thing, right? So, because the next word, which is the first word on the next dot, is chayav. What is he? He's guilty. He's committed a sin. Okay? Okay, so you'll ask me, what the heck is going on over here? Okay. So, we have to go back again to understand what was going on previously to. Okay? There's a big Rashi at the bottom of the previous page. Okay. The Rashi started off, you know, by mentioning this business, you know, about the stick, the difference between breaking it and throwing it. Okay. So Rashi explains the following. He says, Kedamirim Perek Dalet Bisos. He says, there's a chapter about punishments, you know, that require literally the death penalty in Sanhedrin, okay? I think it's the page number over there, of Samach on the base. The Chol Avodah Shebifnim She'ovad Bahen Avodah Kechovim Bein Darko Bechach Bein She'in Darko Bechach Chayav. Okay. Which means various forms of worship that were carried on in the Beis HaMikdash, and if he used one of these forms of worship as idol worship, you understand? You know, doing it for an idol, whether the idol itself normally is worshipped in this fashion, or whether it's not even worshipped normally in this fashion, chayav, he says, you are guilty. Okay? Dichsiv, because we have a pasuk that says, Ovecho lehim yocharav, which means somebody who sacrifices to idols. Over here, lehim means actually imachirim, in other words, idols, right? Is to be put into cherem. Okay? So, Elo, midah dechazan l'shem osur, right? But something which belongs, you know, to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, so that's prohibited. L'chol avedes kechavim, for any form of idol worship. Okay. V'dover she'eino kein p'nim, darka b'chach, and anything that is not like in accordance with the worship that was carried on in the Beis HaMikdash, Chayef, nevertheless, he still is guilty. Why? Because this we derive from the fact is, you know, you should not do anything at all in the manner of which the Goyim served any of their gods. Okay? So, ein darka bechach potur, but if the idol itself is never worshipped either this way, you know, what he did, or in a way, you know, which was carried on in the Beis HaMikdash, right? So, in that particular case, then he would be potur. Zil im lo hayu oed basa b'makil lo b'chayiv b'shev b'makil de lo shaycho b'fnim. Says, so if the idol, right, was never worshipped by the stick, okay, then in that particular case he's not going to be guilty if he breaks the stick. In other words, it has no significance, you understand? Because this was not an action which was carried on in the Beis HaMikdash, okay? The im hoyu oedim oiso b'zirikas makel. However, if you know the worship was by throwing a stick, so lo matzi lemeidag zorak makel before neho, right? Then in that particular case, he cannot really say that if he threw a stick in front of it, then he's potter. But the im mishviras makel. However, in other words, that's why, you know, we say that he simply throws a stick,
then in that particular case, doesn't mean anything, because what is the way of worshipping that particular idol? Breaking the stick, okay?
So even though it imitates the action of the Beis HaMikdash,
there is a parallel, but we'll see in a second on what basis they make the parallel, okay? Now, Zorach, the Imishviras, however, if the worship of that idol consists of breaking a stick, then Pshita Bechayev, that's obvious, right? Pshita, like Pashat, right? It's obvious that he is guilty. The Afal Pi Sheira Vidiso Bechach, that even though this is not the way any worship would take place in the Beis HaMikdash, but the Kevin Delme Shvira Lizvichas Behemo, inasmuch as breaking the stick looks like a parallel to the sacrifice of an animal that was carried on Chalpidim in the Beis HaMikdash, so Sheva Mafrakto, because he has to break the neck of the animal when he slaughters it, right? So Hare Zevach Lefanech, so it's as if he actually had sacrifice to it. So Dover Shavigilo Bol, right? Because this is something that he's accustomed to doing. I thought Zorach, well, just roses, so it's potter. How will the innovator serve the because it's not the way the idol is worshipped. The whole idolatry is benim, and there's no parallel over here to what was carried on the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Now, so, if you remember, Abaye wants to know, he says, how about throwing? Isn't that also an action that was carried on the Beis HaMikdash? Because why? Because the Kohen had to throw the blood of the animal that had been sacrificed against the altar, right? The different forms of, laws pertaining to the altar, where it had to be thrown, how many corners of the altar, and the things like that. In the morning we have a paragraph that's called Ezehu Mekomen Shalz Lochem, which the tendency over here in Kadima is to skip, I'm sorry to say. But those, they describe various sacrifices that take place on the Beis HaMikdash, and it describes where you have to throw the blood, which corner, or is it in all four corners, and things like that, and so on. But as I say, the action of throwing the blood itself is obviously one of the important steps in the sacrifice. Okay? So, it says, but you know what the answer is? Why did he say that simply throwing the stone is okay? Because he says when they threw the blood, as we said in the last couple of words, is Zeriko Mishtaberes, which means that what is thrown breaks up. What do you mean breaks up? In this particular case, it splatters, right? It doesn't all come just in one bunch, but, it splatters in different directions and so on. Okay, exactly. But if the stick doesn't splatter, so in that particular case, then it's not parallel. Okay, this is what's happening over here. Okay. So now, we come now to this new business, right? That you smearing excrement to an idol, which obviously this is the form of worship. That's the point. See, this I have to supply. It doesn't say so, but it's obvious that all these things that are being described is, things, right, which pertain to idolatry, where the idol is worshipped in this particular fashion. Okay. Or by throwing urine in front of it. Right? So, in that case, he's chayav. So, they say, again, the argument continues on the next page over there. He says, Bishlamor, I can understand your reasoning in Avit Shel Meimei Raglayim, namely, this picture of urine. Why? Because Riko Mishtaberes, because when he throws it, again, what happens to the drops of urine? They break up. So, isn't that a parallel to what is going on in the Beis HaMikdash? If it's parallel, then therefore I can understand why there's chayav, right? But he says, Eletzoa. But in the case of excrement, he says, my zrika mishta beresika. Tell me, what kind of a breakup of excrement do we have over here? Does it break up into the little pieces, little knots? So he says, yeah, the possibility is bitzoa lacha. If the the excrement is moist, is soft, or something like that. So it breaks up.
They were laughing when they were discussing.
You know, in many of these things, I think that, yes, there's a great sense of humor in the Talmud, too, which very often we don't recognize.
Because you're taking it seriously, you're studying it seriously. The problem that I have with this is, what kind of a Jew would lower himself to take excrement?
Right.
To smear on an idol. For
right.
What purpose would
right.
he do that?
Right.
To begin with, they're taught, even when they were traveling, to be so careful outside the camp to take it.
You're right. I mean, they had to keep a spade with them so they could dig a hole and cover it over. Exactly.
Hypothetically,
right.
too.
Correct.
Huh? They oftentimes talk hypothetically.
Very often. The Talmud talks hypothetically.
But it's such
absolutely.
It's such a strange thing to even
right.
think about.
Right.
That anybody
right.
See, that's why I thought even if somebody were doing this with the idea of desecrating it,
right.
he would still be committing a sin, according to this. Not
well, that's if a Jew did.
But because it would be
right.
like of a
right. Obviously, we're not talking where the goy does it. We're talking about a Jew does the practice of, what the idolaters are doing. Right.
I can't even
right.
imagine a Jew
right.
being involved like
right.
this. That's
yeah,
why
I know. That's
why
it
has to be
right.
with
this passage, really. Take it with a grain of salt. Okay. Okay. Leimor Kipanei. So now they continue the same sort of business over here. He says, are we to say that, for example, there's a difference of opinion, just as we find among the early authorities, that they quote a Baraisa in this particular case. It says, Shochat lo chagot. If he sacrificed a locust to it. To what? To an idol. Okay? Say, that's Rabbi Shigasa, right? So Rabbi Yehuda Bechai, if Rabbi Yehuda says that the man is guilty, Bechachamim Paitrim, and the rabbis say he's not. Okay? My love, Bechorka Biflegei, why can't we say that the reason why there's this disagreement is because they're arguing about the following theory? The Mar Sovar Arminon Keynes Micha, that one authority said that this is similar to an action of sacrificing, right? Umar Sovar, and the other authority feels Le Arminon Keynes Micha, right? The other one says, no, it doesn't look at all, like an action of slaughtering, right? Sacrificing. Eloke ein penim loy. But there's no question that if he actually is doing it because he wants to imitate a practice in the Beis HaMikdash, no. The chulei almo le'aminon, right? Because all the authorities are in agreement that we're not talking about it should not be like sacrificing, but rather what was done in the Beis HaMikdash, the Shana Chagov, right? So why should they pick out a locust? When is a locust slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash? Of course not slaughtered. Ever hear of a locust sacrifice?
No, no such thing. So why did Rabbi Yehuda then say, you know, that he's guilty? So he says, the reason is as follows. He says, he says, Shani Chagov, he says, the business of the locust is different. Hoyel et savore daimen et savore behem. He says, the neck of a locust resembles the neck of an animal. And so, therefore, if he breaks the neck of the locust, it's similar as if he was breaking the neck of an animal, the Beis HaMikdash. So if he performed this as an idol worship, then the sale again goes back. We have to bear in mind always that whatever these actions are, it's because he wants to worship the idol in this fashion. There is a type of sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash which consists of breaking the neck. Not talking about the ordinary animal, actually, what do you have to do with an animal? With an animal, you have to slit the throat and make sure, you know, that you have cut the windpipe and the jugular, okay?
Pigeons or the bird or something.
Now, with pigeons over there, that already... there, what the Kohen has to do is actually to break the neck of the pigeon. So that this is why he says over here, you know, that breaking the neck of the locust resembles the breaking the neck of the pigeon. Some locusts are fairly big.
Are they?
Yeah. I don't know if they're as big as a pigeon. I mean, we think, you know, little grasshoppers,
yeah.
But that they're also bigger ones. Because, as a matter of fact, certain locusts could be eaten.
Yeah.
So,
But they're not shepherds.
No, you don't chef the locust if you're going to eat it, right. For this, we really need old-fashioned Tebanim, old Yemenites, because they used to eat it. And they knew the difference between what was a kosher locust and what was an unkosher one. Okay? But we are not experts in that, and somehow my taste doesn't go to locusts right now. Okay. We'll learn and think until 8:30 and call it a night, okay? Alright. So, here we come back again to something that was a problem a few moments ago. Okay? So, Omar Rav Nachman, says, he comes back again, look, they're talking about breaking the neck, right? So, Rav Nachman said, Omar Rabba Barabuha, Omar Rav, the name of Rabbi, says, Avodas Kechovim, Shoeitim, Soba Makir. An idol where the worship actually consists of using a stick, right? So shova makom b'fodech chayov, right? So if he breaks the stick before it, right? Then in that case he is guilty. And then asaras, and the stick is also prohibited. But zarak makom b'fodecho, if he threw a stick in front of it, chayov. He is guilty. He should not have done that anyway, right? Because it might be misinterpreted as what? As idol worship, right? The Aedon is Neaseris, but the stick itself is not prohibited. So this is what Rav said. So Amalei Rav al Rav Nachman. So Rav said to Rav Nachman, who reported this, says, Maishno Shovar, the Avyalei Kein Zmicha, right? Says, look, what's the difference? He says, if he breaks it, this is like sacrifice, right? This is what you said. Zorak nami, have you lay kain zmicha? So, wouldn't throwing it also be just like, you know, the throwing of the blood that the kohen has to perform? So, amalei, he says, yeah, well, again, be inon zmicha mishtaberes, we need throwing that involves breaking up into, you know, individual drops, build echo, and it's not existing in the case of breaking the stick. So, elomeyot, if that's the case, let's get back to what we started with. Avne besmar kulis. All right, how about the stones that are formed in order to create this pile for Mercury, right? Tell me, how is it that the stone becomes prohibited? So Amalai said, you know what? After Didikashili, it was also difficult for me. I really don't know why you throw a stone and it becomes prohibited. Vishaltiha, and so I asked about it, the Rabba Bar Buha, right? The Rabba Bar Buha, the Chia Barav. And Rabba Bar Buha passed the buck and he said, you know what, I'll ask somebody else. So he asked who? Chia Barav. Bechia Barav, who did he pass along this question to? To Rav. The Amalei. So Rav's answer to him and says, you know why? Because Naseh Kemigdal Avidus Kochavim. Okay. When you throw a stone, add it to the pile, it's as if you are creating a tower dedicated to the idol. So, Ani Cholamanda Omar, in accordance with the authority which says that Avedes Kechovim Shalevet Kechovim Asura Miyad, that the idol of an idolater is immediately prohibited, then in that particular case, what do we have to say? That the stone that you throw, right, is prohibited, right? Elo Lamanda Omar Achate Aved, but the one who says that an idol doesn't mean anything until the moment that it's going to be worshipped, then in that case, Tish Torah, it should be permitted. That is, the stone should be permitted. The Olay Palcha, because it has not yet been used as worship. So Amalei, so he said to him, Kolachas v'yachos lasis avedes kechovim v'tekrevis chavirta. So, he says, you know what? Every stone that you throw becomes part of an idol. And that being the case, it's as if you are, by throwing the stone, as if you are making an offering to the idol. If that's the case, he says, why shouldn't the last stone be okay because it's not really yet worshipped? So Omar, so he answered him, and says, if you know really that it's not yet been worshipped, then you can take it away. But the truth of the matter is, he says, Rav Ashi says that kol achas v'achas naseis tekreves liatzbo, every single stone that you throw, he says, becomes like an offering in its own right, v'tekreves l'chavirta, and also an offering to what is already there, literally to its companions that are already over there. All right, we'll stop at this point. I'm kind of tired, I have to admit. Right.
All right.
Right. Yeah. Coming up to the Gehenna season. So, tonight is the 27th. If I remember correctly, the month of September 2006. We are continuing right now in the middle of Avodah Zarah, Nun Aleph, Omen Aleph. Okay. So, the Gemara now brings a different case in connection with the Markulis. Okay? It says, Matzah Tanan. Okay. Tanan means that this is a Mishnah that we have learned. Okay. We'll come across it as we go, but not tonight. Okay. As far as I know. However, they already are quoting the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? It says, Motzo Baroshe Kasusa Boys O Kalim Tare Elu Butorin. Okay. It says that if you find on top of the idol either a garment or money or some tools or something like that. So it says, Hare Elu Butorin, these garments or these tools or the money is permitted. In other words, what is the Mishnah saying over here? The Mishnah is saying that these are not a normal way of worshipping. And remember that in the past couple of weeks they tried to establish that one of the things that we look for is to see, is the idol being worshipped in the same manner that worship was taking place in the Beis HaMikdash? If so, then it is prohibited. If not, then the basic idea is that if this is the peculiar way of worshipping the idol, it's prohibited. But if it's an unusual way and it's not the way the idol is normally worshipped, then in that case the object itself, you know, would be considered okay, according to the more liberal opinion. Obviously, you have always a machbir and you have a mekel. You always have somebody who's more strict and somebody who's less strict in this particular case. Okay? So, therefore, is it normal to have a garment thrown on top of an idol? The answer is no. That's not a way of worshipping. Same thing, who puts money on top of it? Although I remember, I mean, when the Italians have their feast, people go and they pin money. Right, to the statue over there. But apparently it wasn't done back in those days. That would be a waste of money, they decided. And the same thing, put a hammer on top of something, Caleb. Whatever Caleb means over here, you know, it could be any kind of a tool or an implement, whatever it may be. Okay, however, Parkile Anovim, Vatoros shall she bolem yenu shemanim the salosois the choldova shev chayotzi bo kori the gabe mizbeach also. However, parkili anovim. What are parkili anovim? These are branches with dates. With grapes. In other words, a piece of a vine with a grape. Okay, or. What's the next thing over there? My eyes strained. Atoros shel shibolim, or wreaths that are made of grain. Okay? What do they mean by wreaths? So obviously they're thinking in terms of, for example, the way back at the Greeks, so they always used to mark the victor, right? But actually also on there was one that they would use olive grapes or something around, you know, to make wreaths and put them on their head. So if you find this kind of a wreath, or wine, or oil, you know, olive oil, or solus is pure flour, you know, and you find, you know, gifts of those, and anything that of this nature that was used in the worship service of the altar, right? So it's awesome. It's prohibited. Of course, we know. Wine, this was a nesach, as we would say. Right?
Right.
Okay. In other words, there was always, at the time of a sacrifice, they would pour a certain amount of wine on the altar. You know, revius ahin, a fourth of a hin.
Right. No,
okay.
Studied about what wine would be.
Or shemonim, you know, olive oil, obviously. Where was olive oil used? Well, it was used in various places, but it was used first of all for the menorah itself, and then it was also used with the mincha, because the mincha was made out of solus, fine flour, mixed with shemen, mixed with oil. So these were part of the Beis HaMikdash worship service. That being the case,
then if this is what you find with the idol, then obviously it is prohibited. So they say, Mishnah, okay, we can understand it as far as Yeno, Shemonim, Misalosis, Ikar Kenein Pim, right? These things, wine, the oil, fine flour, this corresponds to what was offered in the Beis HaMikdash. The Ikar Kenein Siriko, Mishnah Beres. Not only that, but we said that, you know, when they pour, it has to break up into individual drops or something like that. Individual piece, that's what they mean by Mishnah Beres. It breaks up into individual, right. Okay? Ela Parkila Yanovim Atosho Shibolim Lo Kempenim. However, this business with vines with grapes still on them, or wreaths of the made out of grain, this was not a form of the Beis HaMikdash worship. So he gives an answer. He says, "Zirika mishtaberes ika." They do have, he says, you know, broken up, but nevertheless, really, I'm talking to Loika Ein Zirika mishtaberes ika. This is really what I would have to, how I would have to parse this particular statement. I have to say, you know, that you don't have in, you know, this at all is part of the temple worship. So the question is, so why should it be prohibited? Of course, I already gave an answer because this was typical of the Lady Zohar. But the Gemara is asking this question. So Amar Rava. So Rava said, Omar Ulo, in the name of Ulo. He said, "Kigon sheb tzoron mitchidu l'chach." The reason that he gives is that they were literally harvested. In other words, the farmer who cut down, who cut this branch, or who, what is the other thing over there with the reeds, so they planted, you know, the grain. He did it with the purpose of dedicating it to the idol. So that's the reason why, because it's dedicated to the idol. Okay? Right, sure. Okay, first of all, it's not ponim, but it's pnim. Pnim, like pnimi.
Within?
Within, right. So what is the pnim? Pnim means within the Beis HaMikdash. Whereas, right now,